sort of simple definition. So, you know, when you're selling out, you're putting your own interest ahead of those of somebody else. In the case of sales, you're putting your own interest before those of your buyers. And what that, when you have that mindset, then you think sales is all about persuading somebody to sort of do something, whether they really want to or not, right? It's about, hey, my job, if I'm selling out, my job is to persuade you to buy my product. That's how I look at my job. Narrow focus, get you to buy my product. And if you have that mindset, then you don't really focus on what's really important to the buyer, because it's all about you. Because my job is to persuade you to do something, regardless of what your concerns are. And so when you do that, then that leads you down this path of you become pushy and manipulative. And I mean, even if you're not thinking you are, this is how it's being perceived by the buyer. And this creates this, you know, sort of pervasive stereotype that exists of salespeople. It's, you know, all about them and what they need, and not really about helping the buyer get what they need.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, we can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Andy Paul. Andy, what's up? How are you?
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Ben. Doing great. Beautiful summer day.
I'm excited to be here with you because we're going to talk about selling without selling out. To give everybody context, Andy has more than 30 years experience as a sales professional and vice president of sales with enterprises ranging from Fortune 1000 companies to technology startups. As founder and principal of Sales Action Group, he has consulted with numerous CEOs to help them discover the key to consistent sales success. Host of Sales Enabling Podcast with Andy Paul. Over 1,200 episodes, top 0.5% globally. So clearly knows what he's talking about and brings on great people in the podcast as well. And he's the author of multiple best-selling books, most recently, Sell Without Selling Out, a proven framework to increase win rates and shorten decision cycles without the salesy. Yeah. Without the salesy behaviors buyers hate. In a moment, I'm going to ask you what these salesy things are.
Sure.
But I want to give the audience a little more context because obviously you're kicking butt and taking names. I presume you didn't just roll out of bed one day and start working and consulting with incredible Fortune 1000 companies. Give us a little bit of context about what brought you here today. And potentially weave in how you kind of figured out that there was an issue in sales along the way.
Sure. I started my career selling computer systems, you know, on-premise computer systems at the time, a company called Burroughs, second largest computer company in the world at that time. Not that meant much since IBM had 80% of the market share. That was pre-antitrust days. But just got into the tech world from that. I was working in the San Francisco Bay Area, got this interesting sort of period of time after I'd been at that company for a couple of years where, you know, we were selling these systems that in today's terms were $250,000 systems to small, mid-sized businesses, and started losing orders to this company called Apple. And, sure. You know, Apple IIs that didn't even have disk drives. And we were selling these complex business computers that handled every application in your general ledger for a company could want. So I started seeing a little trend with that and thought, maybe the future is going to be a little bit different. Had a friend that just gone to work for Apple, picked a phone, called him, introduced me to somebody, got a job, worked at. So I worked at Apple really pretty early days of Apple, back in the early 80s. And that sort of led to another startup and another startup after that. And eventually found myself, I'd spent about 15 years selling large, complex satellite communication systems for startup companies. Traveling the world, sold in every continent but Antarctica, but was sort of anxious to get off the road after 15 years of, you know, several hundred thousand miles a year and travel. So, year 2000, started my own company in order to sort of do what I had been hired to help startups do, which is, you know, it was a small company with no track record, no brand name. How do you go compete for big business? How do you get big orders? How do you win large deals competing against large established companies? And so that was sort of my niche that I worked with, you know, companies on and helping them scale up what they were doing, and did that. Still do a little bit of that, but sort of about 10 years ago, I published my first book, and a lot of sort of like most consultants, you're writing a book as a business card, sort of. And actually, turned out to have an audience that I didn't expect. And that sort of got me on the path of blogging, which I hadn't really started at that point, and building a following, and led to a second book, led to the start of the podcast, third book. And here we are. So it's been interesting because it's, you know, I tell people, is, you know, look at your career in chapters. And I've had very distinct chapters in mine. And this last one, which I don't think will be the final one, but the last one with the podcast and content creator, yeah, it's been so much fun. I mean, had to learn a lot of new things, and in the process met a lot of really interesting, smart people that taught me a lot.
Absolutely. And on the podcast, you've talked to over 1,000 smart, interesting people in marketing and sales. What are some of the commonalities? Let's talk about selling out. So in a moment, I want to hear commonalities of some of the things you've heard that doesn't work in this day and age. What exactly is selling out? I know what it is in, you know, the music industry where I come from originally, but what does it mean in regards to sales?
Yeah, it's probably not too different, actually. So if you think about just sort of simple definitions, you know, when you're selling out, you're putting your own interest ahead of those of somebody else. In the case of sales, you're putting your own interests before those of your buyers. And what that, when you have that mindset, then you think sales is all about persuading somebody to sort of do something, whether they really want to or not, right? It's about, hey, my job, if I'm selling out, my job is to persuade you to buy my product. That's how I look at my job. Narrow focus, get you to buy my product. And if you have that mindset, then you don't really focus on what's really important to the buyer, because it's all about you. Because my job is to persuade you to do something, regardless of what your concerns are. And so when you do that, then that leads you down this path of you become pushy and manipulative. And I mean, even if you're not thinking you are, this is how it's being perceived by the buyer. And this creates this, you know, sort of pervasive stereotype that exists of salespeople. It's, you know, all about them and what they need, and not really about helping the buyer get what they need. What I draw in the book is this contrast between selling out, which is an archaic, obsolete, conventional selling behavior, you know, summarized in being salesy, with what I call selling in. So you're not selling out, you're selling in. And selling in is based on the mindset that your job is not about persuading somebody to do something. Your job instead as a seller is to listen to the buyer. You understand the things that are most truly most important to them in terms of the challenges they face and the outcomes they want to achieve, and then helping them get that. So the emphasis on listening, understanding, and helping as opposed to persuading.
Guess what happens when they get what they need?
Oh, you get what you need. Exactly. Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. And this is, and I talk about this specifically in the book, that's sort of a, just paraphrase, you know, Zig Ziglar, famous sales expert, I think it was him that said, you know, if you help enough other people get what they want in life, then you get what you want in life. And yeah, that's so true. And I heard Zig on Muslim car books on tape in my car when my first sales job, driving from call to call. But yeah, that sort of stuck with me. But I always sort of, had that mindset. Maybe it's just the way my parents raised me or whatever. But as someone who is not a real extrovert and getting into sales, that just seemed like a better path. That was a more natural path for me. Mm. And so I write about in the book with selling in, is there's these four pillars of selling in that are based on these innate human behaviors. I think these salesy behaviors that are off-putting to buyers, those are learned behaviors. You're taught those behaviors. And the contrast is with selling in is the core behaviors you need to have, and these are innate human behaviors: connection, curiosity, understanding, and generosity. Not a word you hear associated with sales very often, so generosity. But you know, we are wired to connect with other people. We're social animals, right? So we're wired to want to connect. We're wired to want to understand people, you know, be curious, understand, you know, we use our curiosity to navigate the world around us from the moment we're born. You know, we pop out in the world, suddenly it's light and there's all these people standing around and, hey, what are these things on the end of my hands? Or, hey, what are my hands? I mean, we're day one, we're asking questions, trying to figure out. And unfortunately, what happens in the world is that we tend to suppress curiosity. You know, people are sort of taught curiosity is disruptive, right? You know, how often as a kid, maybe you heard, hey, enough with the questions, just do what you're told. Or maybe you've heard that at a job, right? Enough, just do what you're told.
That's all I've heard my whole life. The listeners know if anything, I anger people with my curiosity because I want more. I want the nuanced answer, but go on.
Yeah, well, so we intentionally or not, I think there's some degree of intent, is consider people that are really curious and as I said, disruptive, as troublemakers. And so, you know, we have to sort of get past that. Cause again, that is innate behavior, understanding how do we make sense of the world around us, right? As we use our curiosity to navigate it, we use our understanding to make sense of it. And then finally our generosity is, yeah, how do we help other people achieve what's important to them? How do we provide value to them that enable them to make a decision in the case of a sales situation? So these are all, like I said, innate behaviors we all have. Really, our job as sellers to say, look, how do I develop that aspect of myself and bring that to bear in my conversations with buyers in order to help them get their job done? Because too often in sales, we're always thinking about, well, my job is to sell you something. But if you put in the framework, as my job is to help you make a decision, then again, you're more likely going to lean into your connection, your curiosity, your understanding, your generosity to help the buyer do that.
This is a slight digression, but I presume the podcast has led to sales for these reasons, in a sense, correct?
Sure.
You
sure.
Tell me. You're saying connection, curiosity, understanding, generosity, and that's the whole reason I do the podcast.
Right.
And then it's not uncommon. It doesn't happen every moment, every day, that people reach out to me and be, Ben, I love what you do. I want to work with you.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. People, well, I mean, you're a podcaster. So you bring yourself to the show and your opinions and the things that you believe in and stand for. So yeah, people have a very clear understanding of me as a result of listening to the show.
And in a moment, I want to talk about exactly what it looks like to be selling in, maybe like more process oriented. But first, a lot of people might not know that they personally might be selling out. Maybe they're working for a company and they feel icky in their role. I know personally, and I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, I felt really icky in my sales role. And then I started doing things my own way. My numbers went up. Mm-hmm. And my sales manager quite literally said, "Ben, I don't know what the fuck you're saying or what you're doing, but I'm going to have to put you over in the corner and keep putting money on the board." Mm-hmm. So he almost shamed me for doing things interesting, but he at least acknowledged that whatever I was doing, which really all I was doing, Andy, was asking a ton of questions. But yeah. I'm wondering, because a lot of people might not know that they're selling out or their sales manager is, or maybe they're somewhere in a spectrum. I mean, none of us are perfect. What does it look like? You can throw someone under the bus if you want to.
Oh, no, the only reason. You.
But what does it sound like? What does it look like? Is there a certain tone or phrasing? What does selling out look like?
Well, we sort of think of the, this is an extreme example, but think of sort of the worst case you've sort of seen, let's say, in a TV show or a movie of how a salesperson is portrayed. That's sort of it, right? In one extreme, you said we all sit on a spectrum with selling out on one end and selling in on the other, and we're a mix. We're all somewhere along the spectrum. But that's one example. Or just, you know, close your eyes and think back to a personal sales experience you've had that you found unsatisfying or distasteful. And what was taking place then, right? You probably felt under pressure to make a decision. Probably felt like you didn't have enough information to make a decision. You felt like it was all about the salesperson, what they needed at that moment, not what you needed. You felt like maybe being a little manipulated because, hey, you signed today, you're an extra discount.
And then tomorrow, the same discount's available.
Yeah, you come back tomorrow. Which is always the line I used with car salespeople when they were doing that to me. But we all experienced it. Right. And we've seen it. And unfortunately, I said that stereotype exists, unfortunately, for a reason. And it's not that salespeople are uniformly salesy or bad. It's just that, you know, some substantial portion sort of been trained or socialized that that's what their job is. Their job is to go out and persuade somebody to buy their product, not really understanding that's not really their job at all.
You said trained or socialized. So this is a learned behavior.
Oh, these are learned behaviors. Yeah. I mean, yes, in the main. I mean, we've all experienced, like, my son, my oldest child, when he was young, very persistent, really very salesy when he was trying to get things that he wanted. He's not that way now. I think there's sort of kids, you sort of have that. But we see what's happening in movies. We see what's happening in TV shows. We see there is a woman on my show, Dawn Dieter Schmelz, who's head of the undergraduate sales degree program at Kansas State University, and had her on the show earlier this year. And she was sort of giving an example of that. She said, look, she teaches lots of courses on selling, obviously, at Kansas State. One that she teaches, Introduction to Professional Selling. And the program at Kansas State is perhaps the most well-regarded undergraduate selling program in the United States, or among the most well-regarded. And she said that in her Introduction to Professional Selling course, she's got these 18, 19-year-old kids who have no exposure to sales, no background in sales. For the most part, parents aren't in sales. And she says when she does her first role play with them, they all default almost uniformly to being super salesy. And it's just there, right? They sort of picked it up somehow. They picked it up that this is the persona you're supposed to assume when you're selling, as opposed to being yourself, right? Because as soon as they start being salesy, that's not them anymore. And so it's in part the reason why the subtitle to my book is A Guide to Success on Your Own Terms, because I don't believe there's one way to sell. I don't believe there's two ways to sell. I think there's... If there's 5 million salespeople in the world, there's 5 million unique ways of selling. You know, you discovered one yourself, right? This was the Ben way of selling, the Ben methodology. And sure, you were influenced by various things, but it was uniquely you based on your personality and how you interacted with people. And unfortunately, what's happened in certainly in tech sales, B2B software sales, and so on over the last 15, 20 years has been this real move toward conformity. Right, we've got this process and we have this tech stack that we use and want everybody to do things this way. well, it doesn't really work. And the data shows it. Doesn't mean that some companies haven't grown doing that, but it wasn't because of their sales model. In fact, arguably, you can look at the data underlying that and say, yeah, the sales model, based on their results, they're probably underperforming from where they should be. So it's still a human business. We're still people to selling to people. And when buyers make a decision, there's been multiple studies on this. Challenger had it. Other analyst firms have talked about it. Is that more than 50% of the buyer's purchase decision is based upon their experience with the individual seller.
Okay.
Not with the company, with the seller. And
the features, the benefits, the slide deck.
No, it's, and so there's been more recent data that I share when I do presentations, partner company that I work with, is consulting firms conducted thousands of in-person interviews with buyers around the world. This is their job. They're a consulting firm. They do win-loss analyses for sales organizations. And they recently summarized their findings based on all these interviews into 9 reasons why you win deals and 9 reasons why you lose deals. And on the 9 reasons why you lose deals, none of them are about the product or the price. It was all about, almost in the main, about the experience they had with the seller. And the same thing was true with 9 reasons why you win deal. I think in the 9 reasons why you lose, it was like 5 of the 9 reasons were specifically selling out reasons. Mm-hmm. And the 9 reasons why you win, 7 of the 9 were selling in. That's what the buyers remember. Right? When they're having to make a decision about something, they remember their experience with you as a seller. So I wrote the book in part because, based on all the work I do with companies and the conversations I had with, I said, hundreds and hundreds of people on my show, it was pretty clear to me is we're not getting any better at this thing of business-to-business selling. In fact, arguably, we're getting worse. There's data that would suggest that actually we are getting worse. And why, when we have the benefit of all this amazing technology to put to use to help us be better, why are we getting worse? And my conclusion is that, well, we've strayed too far from the human element of selling, right? We want to rely so much on the technology and the process to help us things that really are tangential and which the buyers say don't factor into their decision at all. And so it's part of an effort to say, look, when people buy from people, they buy from a human, not from a company, not from a process. They buy from the person. And so it's really important if you're a seller and you're putting yourself in that situation to be intentional about bringing the best you, the best version of you, to every interaction you have with the buyer.
I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I said it before on this podcast. Humans sell and market to humans that purchase from humans, that renew with humans, that provide referrals, recommendations, nominations, whatever you want to call it, to other humans. And even when they're creating a SaaS product, who made that SaaS product?
Oh, yeah.
and it's very human. So I love this. The choir is listening.
The choir is listening. Well, I hope everybody at home is a choir as well. But I like to say is, we don't. You're not selling to a persona. You're selling to a person, and you have to remember is, unfortunately, too many sellers. We arm our sellers today with great data about the people they're selling to, your ideal client profile. Within that is, here are the various people you need to talk to. Here's the personas for each of those titles. Here's the playbook. Here's the questions you ask. And what you're doing is you're sort of saying, well, you don't really need to be curious or even that interested. Just go execute this, right? Mm-hmm. Execute this process. Execute the script in the playbook. Yeah, it's just all very superficial. And if you're a buyer on the receiving end of that, it's like, well, where's the human here, right? So, if you never dig below the surface, as you obviously do, ask more questions. really get to a detailed level of understanding what's really, really important for the buyer. And I talk about in the book is that too many sellers just are satisfied to gather information, but they don't really understand why that information is important. And they think, oh, I've done my job. I've got the answer to these six or seven questions. But it's like, yeah, but what do you understand about that? Why is it important to the buyer? What's the impact of that could be on the buyer in terms of them making a decision or not making a decision? Or, you know, just you got to go deeper and give free rein to your curiosity. Otherwise, yeah, you're just sort of going through the motions and buyers sense that.
So obviously playbook of what has worked is educational. However, we want to go in and sell without selling out. We understand the purpose here. What, without being, I know this is a broad stroke because every industry, every person, every buyer, every conversation is going to be different than the next. I know this is a broad stroke, but what should that presentation, sales call, whatever you want to call it, what is that going to look like? How do I start?
Well, it's, yeah, that's sort of infinitely variable, right? Because there's a first call, second call, third call, whatever. But think about from this perspective is, you know, think of these four pillars: connection, curiosity, understanding, generosity.
Yes.
Is your intent every time you interact with the buyer is to deepen the connection, deepen your discovery, right? Deepen your understanding and deepen the value that you're providing that helps them make progress toward making a decision. And that's what you're trying to do. So, you know, within that context is, yeah, are you building this connection that opens up credibility and trust, right? Now, trust is one of these words that gets bandied around quite a bit in sales. And, but in this context, what you're trying to do is the trust is the level of trust that enables the buyer to open up to your questions. So many sellers go in and think, well, if I ask these questions, people are, of course, they're going to answer.
How much revenue do you make? What's your biggest problem?
Yeah.
And are you the decision maker, Andy?
Right. Do you have the budget authority on this? Ugh. And people, yeah, they may answer. They may give a superficial answer just to sort of get you to go away.
Sure.
But without that trust, they're not going to open up. They're not going to, as I like to say, they're not going to let you stick your nose into their business, which is really what you need to do effective discovery and really get a detailed understanding of what's really important to the buyers. You really got to be a little bit intrusive and stick your nose in their business. And they're going to give you permission to do that because you've earned that level of trust with them. So yeah, deepen that connection. So you open that trust or build that trust. With that trust comes the customer saying, look, all right, if I'm going to start answering these questions, these more detailed questions, what I'm basically doing is I'm giving you permission to influence me, right? I'm opening you up to your influence, which is you want, right? Not heavy persuasion, you're influencing. It's having an effect on the thoughts or the actions of others without apparent use of force. That's influence as opposed to persuasion, which is more coercion based. So, you know, you get into this, you know, asking your questions, digging down deep, you start understanding, yeah, this level of understanding, what's really important to the buyer, not 20 things that are important to the buyer, because there's never 20 things that are equally important. There's always one or two things that are most important. They're really driving a decision. Yeah. If you give free rein to your curiosity, build that level of trust, you're going to reach that level of understanding. Now, when you have that level of understanding with the buyer, you basically reached agreement on, okay, this is the target, right? This is what's most important to us. So then you as a seller can then work with the buyer to create what I call in the book and a vision of success, right? What is success going to look like using our product or service? Now, we always talk a lot about storytelling and sales, and it's important. But I believe the story the buyer most wants to hear is their own story.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going to work with them to create that story. What's that going to look like when they're successful with our product? Excuse me. And if you can do that and the buyer buys into it, there was a study that's done by Forrester 10 plus years ago saying that if you were they called it the buying vision, but if you were the first seller to get the buyer to buy into your buying vision, your odds of winning a business were like at 60%. Mm. Right? That's pretty significant, right? If you knew you could do something that would give you a 60% win rate, you'd probably take it every day of the week. So yeah, now really important, because that becomes a critical milestone, is have we reached that agreement on what's really important to them? Once we do that, if your competitors haven't gotten that level of understanding, it doesn't mean the buyer's going to share it with them.
Sure.
Heavens no. I mean, they don't just give that information out willy-nilly. Even if they've shared it with you, they don't say, oh, now that we've told Andy, we have to go tell Ben the same thing. Absolutely not. I mean, I've never experienced that.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So if you get to that point, as I like to say, at that point, where you've reached that mutual level of understanding, and you're making the buyer feel really understood, it's kind of yours to lose at that point. So one way to not make sure you don't screw it up is to keep going down the path of saying, okay, let's start building this vision of success, right? Let's help the buyer really understand what it's going to be like to use the product. I go through in the book, give examples of how to help do that. Mm. But then, like I said, you stand a pretty good chance of winning if you can do that.
So to clarify, you come in curious, you connect, you ask insightful questions and truly understand their vision of success. You're willing to give generously. That could mean a lot of things, I imagine. And only then do you have an opportunity to actually, I even hate the word pitch, but present your vision for a solution only after you've made that connection.
At that point, it's sort of foregone, right? Because you're building it with the buyer.
With them.
Oftentimes at the end, sometimes buyer will say, well, hey, I had one example, for instance, I'm going to talk about this in the book, with a customer in Scandinavia where they said, hey, come present to our managing board. And we had gone through all these steps we talked about, and it was a fairly significant deal for us at that stage in our company. But I didn't present. What I did is stood at a whiteboard and drew out my understanding of their most important things and drew out this vision of success that we had already created and what it's going to look like. And that's all I needed to do. I mean, I had a slide deck ready, but I didn't use it because why not have a conversation with somebody instead? We've traveled down this road together. This is what collectively you, me, and the client have decided is what's going to be best for you, will help you achieve what you want to achieve. And they're like, okay. I talk about in the book is you don't necessarily use in that presentation, but earlier when you reach this point where you think, okay, I get it. The buyer understands what we can do. We understand what's most important to the buyer. We've agreed on this understanding. This is one really powerful question you can ask. And again, sellers rarely ask it because they think, oh, we've done this, I don't want to go backwards. But just when you think you totally understand everything, just when you think the buyer totally understands everything, you pause and you say, so what are we missing? It's like head explode moment. Boom. Because it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's think about that again.
Eyes start to go back and forth.
Let's think about that. Did we? Oh, yeah. But there's one thing that, okay, now that you brought it up, there's one thing that we really didn't bring up before that, we think, wow, suddenly start surfacing some insights into the buyer that just when you thought maybe you'd wrapped it up, give them another chance. And so oftentimes something comes up. And again, they're telling you, they're not telling everybody else. And so it's really important that you really focus on not, hey, I'm trying to move you from one stage of my process to the next stage. Because first of all, it's just sort of ludicrous that in this day and age, we still train sellers that, we've got these five stages you go through with the buyer. They're sort of linear, and one of them's discovery. And, discovery's got this finite time we do discovery. It's like, no. As I said, every time you meet with the buyer, you're deepening your discovery. You're asking more questions. You're trying to get a deeper level of understanding. And the way people buy is very fluid. I mean, Gartner came out with a study in 2018, 2019 called Buyer Enablement. And there's this famous diagram about the buyer's journey. And it's what they call it internally. Some of the people call it the spaghetti diagram, because it looks like you took a handful of cooked spaghetti and threw it against the wall. And it's anything but linear, anything but a straight line, anything but logical, the path that buyers go through to make a purchase decision. And you have to be aware of that ambiguity when you sell, right? And understand, and there was sort of a core at the beginning, right in the middle of it, was sort of buyers do think they have jobs to get done, you know, this, and define the requirements, you know, define, what's available in the marketplace, choose a vendor. But you can align to that, just using the pillars of selling in to be able to help the buyer navigate that. But it's too often sellers just want to sort of take the path of least resistance. And you just have to be aware that buying is a complex pursuit on the part of the buyers. They don't do it very often in terms of the type of product, typically the type of product you're selling, unless you're selling something that's, you know, renewable or something. But you know, if you're selling business software, They may buy it once every 3 to 5 years. And the people that bought it the last time aren't here anymore, right? Because you're not the same salespeople oftentimes either.
True.
So there's no institutional history about this is how we buy this particular type of product. So they're figuring it out as they go along. So your job as a seller, you think about it. Think about what the buyer is trying to accomplish. Not in terms of solving a problem. What's the buyer trying to accomplish when they're out making a purchase decision? And so, and I write about this in the book, what they're doing is they're trying to quickly gather and make sense of the information they need to make an informed decision with the least investment of their time, attention, and resources possible. That's what a buyer wants to do. Yeah, somebody's given a job. You're on a buying committee. We're going to buy a piece of software. It's like, right? But what do you want to do when that's the case? I want to get that off my plate as soon as I possibly can, because that's not my job, right? I've got a real job. That's what buyers are trying to do. You know, they're not trying to spend a year to make a decision on something they could make on 6 months if the sellers enable them to do it. So your job as a seller, again, as you're listening to understand what's most important to them, is you have to just be intentional about this fact that every time the buyer does invest some of their time and attention in you, it's like any other investment in life. They're expecting return on that investment. Mm. So what's that return look like? Well, it's very simple. And again, I write about this in the book, is the return is progress, meaning that as a result of investing my time and attention in you as a seller, am I closer to making a decision as a result of that investment or not, right? Am I closer at the end of this interaction, whether it's an in-person meeting, Zoom meeting, a phone call, you know, reading an email from you? If as a result of that, am I closer to making a decision than I was beforehand? Then there is a return for the buyer. So as a seller, you have to be very conscious about saying, okay, I'm going to take some of my buyer's time. How am I going to help them earn a return on that time? How am I going to be able to ensure that as a result of meeting with me or listening to me, that they're closer to making the decision? Yeah, this much or this much, whatever. Are they closer than they were beforehand? And if they're not, this is sort of, you know, harsh for some sellers when I tell them, I said, if they're not, then don't do it. Don't reach out to them. Don't make a phone call. Don't, until you are ready to make that happen. Until you're ready to uphold your end of the bargain, which is you're going to help them make progress, don't waste their time.
You know, light bulbs going off for me in the head. Because I'm imagining, you know, where they are now, where the buyer is now, and where they would like to be and where they would like to go. And there's going to be scenarios where my solution isn't the perfect fit.
Yep.
Or it's not the perfect time.
Yep.
Or it actually isn't there's no reason to bully them into budget. It's actually not a good budget decision for them right now. However, to me, and I've worked in companies where, did you get the sale? No. Up. Oh, that's a zero. To me, to me personally, this is maybe me just getting all, you know, soapbox emotional. If I can take them from 0 to 5, even if they haven't made it to 100, I feel better knowing that I helped them get to 5. And my hope is that, I mean, in a perfect world, we had the perfect solution and they're going to work with me. But if I took them from 0 to 0, nothing happened. If I took them 0 and then I wasted their time, they're still at 0 and their time was wasted. If we can get them a little bit closer, my hope and my intuition is they'll come back around when they're ready. And even if they don't, I feel good for helping them lead in the proper direction rather the opposite direction, which can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think many sellers, and I certainly have experience in our careers, is saying to the buyer, hey, look, I don't think this is a fit. Hey, here's maybe another company you should talk to, or, you know, this is what I recommend you do. And yeah, it came back to me later, right? In form of business with that company.
I want to talk a little bit more about that.
But the key, I was just going to finish. The key is,
please give me the key.
Do it early enough, right? Is you don't want to have that understanding come, you know, after you've invested, you know, 100 hours selling to that buyer and say, like, oh yeah, I just don't think you're a fit. That's just why it's really important to look at this connection part of the equation is so paramount, because if I don't make this connection, if I don't build this trust, I'm never going to get to that level of understanding that enables me to say, yeah, this is not going to be a great fit, right? And these are the reasons why, hey, I really appreciate you taking time to talk with us, but, you know, do you mind if we revisit this with you in, you know, 6 months or whatever? People really appreciate that the sooner you do it, the sooner you consume less of their time and less of your time. And this whole issue is sort of, you know, an endemic problem, or a problem that's endemic to sales these days, is that sellers hate to give up pipeline without really thinking through that. Well, it doesn't really constitute pipeline anyway, because A, they're not really a fit, or, you know, they're not qualified in some dimension. And as a result, we have, depending on what study you believe, this high fraction of opportunities in B2B pipelines that end up in the no decision category.
Right.
And to me, that's like the worst of all possible outcomes, right? It's worse than losing. Because what it's saying is, we did such a bad job that the customer at the end of the day said, yeah, no one gave us a reason to buy. Right? So, you know, no decisions are hard to come back from, because the buyers are very sensitive to the fact that they invested a bunch of time with you and other vendors potentially and didn't make a decision. So if you're really asking the right questions, you're being in the moment, you're really focused on the buyer, not going through just your rote script, but really digging down deep, really understanding, you know, the impact of making a change or not making change would be on them, what they really want to achieve. If you get to that point, yeah, better to pull the plug other than think, oh, now we can turn them around. Right? We'll be able to convince them. I know they're not a great fit, but I think we'll be able to convince them to go our way. That's not the approach you want.
Thank you for that. You actually answered my question, Andy. I was going to ask about how to kind of tell them it's not a good fit with grace, and you answered that great. Hilarious thing came to mind. I'm not going to say who said it, because we said we weren't going to throw anybody under the bus, but he said, quote, not interested is still a level of interest. Very famous sales trainer. Not interest is a level of interest. It's not. It's still on a scale of interest.
Yeah. No, I've written about this not too long ago, but yeah, when someone says not interested, it's not an objection. You know, it's a statement of fact. So yeah. Does it mean they have a non-zero level of interest? Yeah, probably not, because they talk to you. But yeah, not interested. Yeah, I had my first boss. I remember going and complaining after I'd been on the job, not too long, you know, a few months, 6 months, whatever, about, you know, sort of getting that a lot, you know, hey, we're just not interested. And what should I do about it? And he turned to me and said, go find some people who are. It was the best answer in the world, right? I mean, seriously, you know, unless you're when I was in the satellite communications industry, I had maybe 200 companies in the world I could sell to, yeah. Right? Most products aren't that limited. Most products, especially in the software world and so on, there's a lot of companies out there. And yeah, if you're running into a lot of people who aren't interested, go find some people who are. I mean, it's that simple. Look at how you're targeting. Look at your ICP. Look at, you know, all these various things you can control as a seller. And what can you change? Instead, yeah, I remember years ago, I posted another version of that post as, you know, I'm not interested, is not an objection. And yeah, some guy on this on LinkedIn, he you know, started ranting in his comment on it. He's, you know, basically calling me weak. And so he says, yeah, when somebody says they're not interested, I was trained. That's when you double down. And I'm like,
yeah, that's when the sale begins. That's when the close begins, Andy.
That's like, dude, come on. First of all, it's never worked, and it works less frequently now. Is, yeah, just treat people with respect. Treat people with, you know, as a little humanity. Mm. And yeah, sometimes you can turn that, hey, we're not interested, to say, okay, got it. Well, would you mind if I sent you some information? And so they're always like, well, yeah. But then you can use that to say, well, you know, there's sort of two things I was thinking. One was a case study about ABC or another was about XYZ. And I said, well, maybe XYZ. And so you say, oh, okay, well, based on your interest in XYZ, that's about, you know, growing your top line through whatever. Something like that's an area of interest to you. Yeah, great. Okay. Well, let me send that to you and then I'll put it on my list. I'll get back to you in 90 days and see if that's something you've uncovered some information with the buyer about something that might be a level of, you know, an area of interest to them, potentially a problem they've got. It's just not the right time for them. Great.
Sure.
Keep your powder dry. Come back in 90 days.
This is all reminding me of the whole he or she could sell ice to an Eskimo. And First off, that's ridiculous. Second off, maybe one Eskimo out of all of them will purchase ice. But if you're getting lots of not interested, that doesn't mean your ice isn't good. Maybe you should be at a music festival where it's 100 degrees out and your ice will not interested quite often means you're selling to the wrong people, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. Very often, if you're getting a lot of it, for sure. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of things in sales that are under your control. That's one of the great things about being in sales is that so much of it is under your control. It's not like you're confined to a desk and you've got a clerical job and it's the same thing every day, It's like, no, fact is everything's different, right? If you're in sales because then you think you can take a level of comfort because you think, well, hey, we've really nailed our ICP and the personas we sell to and all, every sales situation is the same. So I can just do the same thing. You're in the wrong business because the fact is having acumen in sales is not about knowing how, you know, one situation is similar to another. It's about knowing how they're different and being able to respond to that difference in the moment, to be able to ask the right questions and to sort of get in this information that's a little different than what you normally hear, but synthesize that into something that is of value to the buyer. And it's a creative pursuit. That's why people stick in it, I think. That's why I stayed in it for all these years.
The creative aspect of it. So, Andy, I know very shortly you've got your own podcast to record.
Yes, I've got one.
Sales Enabling Podcast. We're about to go to the rapid fire round. One random question while it's on my mind is of all the people that have been on the Sales Enablement Podcast or someone who hasn't been on yet, who is kind of like a superhero or a great embodiment of this correct kind of selling? Who comes to mind as it could be an episode or who does this right other than yourself?
Yeah, other than myself. I think there are a lot of people that do, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not enough. I don't know. It's hard to pick out.
I put you on the spot. You've got like 1,000-something options.
Yeah, it's like trying to pick your favorite child, though. And that's sort of the same thing I like to say.
Yes.
Who
has been influential in your career recently?
Yeah, I don't want to say nobody. I was going to say a lot of people in sort of small ways. And that's that's the thing with the podcast, as I tell people, is that's doing this many episodes, but even doing fewer, but this many, it's really one of the more selfish things I've done in business, because I get the opportunity to learn from all these really smart people. So yeah, I don't think there've been any, you know, game changers, but I think in every episode, every person I talk to, I pick up something. Indeed. Right. That makes me think. And yeah, cumulatively, without a doubt, the podcast has made me better at what I'm doing now.
I want to tell you, I love this answer, because that's kind of where I've answered questions like that before. It's like, oh my God, there's like so many people, and you take bits and pieces from mm-hmm. so many different people. And the podcast is a journey and a labor of love because of all the incredible people you get to talk to and learn from, and take bits and pieces and incorporate. And as you said, maybe you don't take one playbook. You take tiny little plays from thousands of people and create your own.
Your job in sales is become the best version of yourself.
Yourself.
Whatever that means, right? Best version of you. Take the things that you're strong at, accentuate them. Take the things you're not as strong at, learn, get better. But the end result is always going to be you, right? You're not assuming a role. You're not a character in a stage play or in a movie, pretending to be somebody else. You're yourself. And the more you bring yourself to this, the more you'll find it's easier to connect with buyers, build that level of trust, because you know, you've got this level of transparency about who you are. Just leads to success in so many dimensions.
We're going to do the fastest rapid fire round I've ever done. Coffee or tea?
Neither. I don't drink either.
Favorite time of year?
Yeah, I like Thanksgiving.
Favorite activity on the weekend that doesn't involve your work?
I'm big into sort of endurance sports like bike riding and running and swimming and so on.
Love this. Love this. So I saw on your website there's a way that I can actually take a quiz and see what spectrum.
How salesy you are. Yes.
Can I put that in the show notes?
Absolutely.
What exactly is that?
Oh, it's not very scientific, just to give a heads up. But it's just meant to be sort of a fun way to give people a way to sort of gauge where they stand on the spectrum between selling out and selling in.
Love this. Love this. I'll put it in the show notes. Anything that we didn't touch on that you want to bring to the table at the end here?
No, it was great. Thank you for the time. Really appreciate it.
You're about to go do a podcast of yourself. Sales Enablement Podcast is incredible, guys. I recommend it. That's in the show notes. If you're a podcast listener, you know that the show notes is the gospel of this show. So go click some of the links there. And Andy, thanks, man, for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.